all assembled devotees who have so kindly come to participate in Sri Radha Gopinath Sunday Festival. Srila Prabhupada established these temples and installed the deities of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna to attract the hearts of the souls who are lost in material ignorance. The definition of ignorance, according to the holy scriptures and the great saints, is something very different than common secular people of society. Here we think that ignorance is the inability to read, to write. It's coming where ignorance is where you do not understand how to use a computer. But actual ignorance is to not understand who we are, what our purpose in life is, and what is our relationship with God. That is ignorance. By this category, the vast portion of even the most intellectually astute scholars are ignorant. Srila Prabhupada, when he was giving a lecture at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, challenged the professors, the school, and the whole student body. Where is your department that teaches these students what is the difference between the body and the soul? Who I am? And what is my real purpose in life? This is the foundation, the basis of all knowledge. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explained that all material knowledge, all material abilities or qualifications are like zeros. A very successful person may have hundreds of zeros. A less important person may have one or two zeros. But Srila Prabhupada explains at the time of death, they're all added up. Whether you have 10 million zeros, or whether you have 20 million zeros, or whether you have one or two zeros, it all comes to zero. Zero plus zero equals zero. Zero times 100 million zeros equals zero. Zero divided by 35 zeros equals zero. Only when you put one in the front, then every zero that follows has greater value. And that one is knowledge. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that by approaching the spiritual master, he gives knowledge. Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya. If we approach submissively and hear with such submissiveness and are willing to execute what we hear through service, then transcendental knowledge is disseminated within our heart. And what is that knowledge? Krishna explains in the next verse. One who knows that we are all part of Krishna. We are all in Krishna. We are all everything is the property of Krishna. This is knowledge. It is truth. The reality is, Tato Brahma Jigyasa Janmadya Shayataha. Human life begins when we inquire into what is the truth. And what is the truth? That the supreme truth is him from whom everything emanates. Everything is coming from Krishna. Everything is ultimately under the control of Krishna. Krishna controls through three principal energies: his spiritual energy, his material energy. And the third energy is marginal, or the jiva tattva. That is the spirit soul. That is Krishna's energy, part of Krishna, like a ray of sun in comparison to the sun. That is what the soul's constitutional nature is. We are Satchidananda, just like Krishna, but we're just a tiny fragment. Our nature is to be in relationship with Krishna. Factually, we're always in relationship with Krishna. It's impossible not to be in relationship with Krishna, because we are being sustained by Krishna at all times. But we have free will. In that free will, we have the liberty to choose whether we want to be favorably in relationship with Krishna or unfavorably. Just like Prabhupada explains, everyone's under the control of the government. The free citizens, they have to pay their taxes. They're living, they're being protected by the government, theoretically. And the prisoners, they're also being protected and sustained by the government in the prison house. But everybody is under the control of the government. In the spiritual sense, we are all completely dependent on Krishna at every moment. Ignorance means to forget our relationship with Krishna. Then we come under the control of the material nature, which is Durga, which is like a prison house, where the laws of material nature are very stringent. Time is consuming all that is near and dear to us at every second. The laws of karma are calculating, registering everything we do and say, and giving us an equal corresponding reaction. And we're passing through birth after birth after birth after birth, just getting the reactions of our deeds and words. And so much suffering. Adiatmaka, adidaivaka, adibhautaka. Suffering by the body, mind. Suffering caused by other living beings. Suffering caused by natural disturbances. It doesn't matter who you are. You cannot escape the threefold miseries. However big your bank balance is, however strong your body is, however popular you are in the eyes of the world, these sufferings inevitably must come upon you. It is just a matter of time. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, anudarshanam, old age, disease, and death. They are inevitable parts of life. Now those who are a little in the mode of goodness, they somehow or other adjust to old age, disease, and death. They say it's natural. Just like a flower, it begins as a seed, it becomes a bud, and then it becomes a blooming, youthful flower, and then it withers, and it dies. Hare Krishna. So similarly, that's what life is about. So let us just die graciously. It sounds nice, but it's not so easy to actually do that, die graciously, when all kinds of pains and sufferings come. It is an artificial condition due to ignorance. We are the eternal soul. And everything in this creation is the property of the absolute truth or Krishna. To understand that means to reciprocate with Krishna at every moment. He's giving us air. So let our every breath be to glorify him. He's giving us nourishment. So let our energies be to glorify him. He's giving us knowledge. So let my intellect be utilized to glorify him. He's giving me facilities like a home, a family, certain abilities. Let me use them all to glorify him. That is the reciprocation of love. If we use them for any other purpose, we are ungrateful. We are like thieves. By acting according to our constitutional nature, we become purified. And that's what human life is meant for, purification. And Krishna descends to this world just to attract our hearts again to this process of purification. Last week, we celebrated Janamastami, the day when Krishna appears within this world. It's a wonderful festival. In Pune, Radha Kunja Bihari Temple, I was told 35,000 people came for darshan that day. At Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari Temple in Juhu, hundreds and hundreds and thousands come for darshan on that day. In our little Radha Gopinath Temple, it was approximated only about 20,000 people came for darshan that day. So people of India, they have natural desire to get some blessing from the Lord. But all those thousands of people, how many came to our Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan? Probably hundreds and hundreds and thousands. In other words, tens and millions, maybe hundreds of millions are coming to a temple in various parts of the world to celebrate Janamastami. Most people come, they ask for some benediction or blessing. Maybe they give some little gift of a few rupees, and then they go. Haribo. Success. That's very good. They're seeing Krishna, they're hearing the holy name, they're associating with devotees, even if it's for a few moments. It's very auspicious. Very, very auspicious. But actually, Krishna comes to this world to elevate everybody according to their receptivity. Our receptivity is according to how we are willing to reciprocate with Krishna. Real intelligence is described in the 18th chapter of Gita. Sarva dharman purityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masucha. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religiosity, of religion, and just surrender to me. I shall protect you from all your sinful reactions. Do not fear. Fear is such a prominent characteristic within human society. So many things we fear. And our fears are changing at every moment. We constantly fear death, disease, injury. We fear something happening wrong to our loved ones, something happened to our
failure in our endeavors. So many fears are there. Krishna explains, if you surrender to Krishna, he will relieve you of all fear. How is that? Because Krishna gives us knowledge of the transcendent nature of the soul. When Krishna reveals himself to us, then we realize that we perform our duty in this world, but the real truth, the reality of life, is unchanging. It cannot be in any way disturbed or disrupted by any condition of material existence. The reality of my life is my loving relationship with Krishna. That is one thing that this world cannot touch, is your loving relationship with Krishna. Everything else, this world is going to exploit and plunder in due course of time. And that's why we're so fearful, because everything we're basing our shelter and satisfaction in is fallible. It's temporary. It's in the process of destruction at any moment. Padam padam yadvi padam nate sham. But if we find shelter in our love for Krishna, we are happy. We can be happy in every situation of life because that love is eternal. It simply has to be awakened. Krishna consciousness is the art of transforming material into spiritual. Bhakti yoga scientifically achieves this result for anyone who follows it sincerely. To negate our material desires is very difficult, because the nature of the soul is to desire. Anandamayobhyashat. The nature of the soul is pleasure. We can negate our material desires temporarily with tremendous difficulties. The Bhagavatam describes even those souls who actually somehow or other negate their desires to enjoy, become free from the modes of material nature, they actually attain the transcendental position of Brahman realization. That means they extinguish all of their desires, and the soul is in a state uncovered by those desires. Therefore, it can transcend material existence and enter into Brahman. But the tendency, the innate nature of the soul, is to love and be loved. And that can be forgotten. It has been forgotten for so long. We're trying to find refuge for our love in artificial temporary arrangements. When we give up all our desires and our endeavors, we can enter into Brahman. Aruya Krishna Parampadam Tata. But in due course of time, it is inevitable that propensity to love and be loved must awaken in the soul. It is our innate nature. In which case, we have to come back down again into the material world to try to find the gratification of our internal needs. However, if in this life we repose that loving propensity, that propensity for pleasure in Krishna, janma karma cha me divyam evam yogiti tattvata tyaktva deham punara janma naiti mam iti surjana. when we understand Krishna's wonderful appearance and activities, when our attraction and love awakens for him through this process, then we never take birth again in this material world because we attain his eternal transcendental abode, our real home. This is a world of strangers in a foreign land. We are all searching for the comforts, the satisfactions, and the associations of our home. Our home is with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada established these temples as something like embassies of the spiritual world. Like oases within the deserts of material existence. Where our family is here. Our family in the spiritual world is all living beings. We are all related and we all love each other and are eager to serve each other because we recognize how we are all so dearly beloved to Krishna. In the spiritual world, everyone loves each other as they love Krishna. In the sense, they know that Krishna loves every living being, and therefore, we must, naturally, we love what Krishna loves. If you offend someone that your beloved loves, you offend your beloved. If I offend a man or a woman's child, I offend the parents. If I satisfy the child, I satisfy the parents. That is natural. That is love. So in the spiritual world, everyone loves each other because everyone loves Krishna. And these temples are meant to create this type of consciousness. We come to become attracted by the beauty of Krishna, by seeing his form, by hearing his holy names, by hearing his teachings and his wonderful pastimes. Krishna comes to this earth to establish this blessing upon all of us. This is what I look like. This is my pastimes that I perform in the spiritual world. This is how I perform them in this material world. These are my associates. This is the philosophy in which you can know me and love me. Krishna appears for that reason. To teach us. Not only to teach us, but to exhibit the form and pastimes that our soul is longing to remember and to love. That is Janmashtami. So when we come to the temple, the Vaikuntha atmosphere is there. For the last hour, everyone was simply singing and chanting for the praise of Krishna together. And the more devotees that come together, the more Krishna's pleased. Because he wants to see every one of his children liberated from the prison house of material existence. And this sangam of devotees who are learning to serve and love one another through serving and loving Krishna and recognizing everyone's special relationship with Krishna is what will attract the world to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say about devotees, you do not know who that person really is. They may be very, very dear to Krishna. Even if there's some illusion and they're doing some things that are not exactly proper. We don't want to be influenced by that, but we must respect because we don't know how much Krishna loves that devotee. Our spiritual advancement is according to how we please the Lord. these material desires that we have cannot be permanently annihilated. They must be transformed. Or what I mean to speak, this propensity of desire, which is now material, that propensity cannot be annihilated. It must be transformed into spiritual. Sanatan Goswami gave example that through the process of initiation, and when he's talking about initiation, he's not simply talking about the external formalities. He's talking about the real spirit of surrender that is within the framework of those external formalities. Through the process of bona fide initiation, a person can become a Brahman, even if he's of a lower caste. How is that? He explains, just like bell metal, through an alchemical process, there is a way of making bell metal into gold. Do you know that process? The yogis, some of them know it. It's not easy. It's much easier to chant Hare Krishna. What you have to do is you have to develop such intense yogic discipline that you can drink mercury. Mercury is one of the most deadly poisons. If you drink mercury, you die. It's as easy as that. But if you can drink mercury and survive, you have to be a very, very great yogi to do that. Please, don't try it. You will not succeed. After years, after lifetimes of mystic efforts and the yogic process, you can actually drink mercury. And then it goes through your system. And when that mercury enters into your urine, when you urinate on bell metal, it turns to gold. Hare Krishna. Transformation. That's difficult. But by chanting the holy names, by remembering Krishna, we can transform our material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. Transform lust into love. Transform greed into the desire to share the greatest wealth of your heart, your love of Krishna. Transform anger with tolerance and patience and forgiveness. Transform pride with humility. Transform whimsical mind to a steady, determined mind dedicated to the service of the Lord. These transformations take place through the process of Krishna consciousness. Dhruva Maharaj was such an example. He went through a very provoking situation in his life. He was just a small boy of 5, very much depending on the favor of his mother and father. He went to sit on his father looking for love and shelter. His heart was longing for the love and the shelter of his father. He wanted favorable attention. A child desperately needs that. If you love a child, the child learns how to love. If a child is neglected, it's very difficult for that child to actually understand what love is. What you give the child is what the child becomes. That's the responsibility of a parent is vast. It's very, very serious. The scriptures explain, if you're not ready to give the type of environment by which your child will never take birth again in this material world, in God's eyes, you don't have the right to be a parent. That child, that spirit soul, is Krishna's beloved. He's entrusting that child under your care. If we care for the child in harmony with the will of the proprietor of that soul, Krishna, Aham Bija Pratapita, the Supreme Eternal Father. In one sense, we are all like foster father and mothers. In the sense that it's somebody else's soul, it's Krishna's soul, under our care. So if you give the child Krishna, then the child naturally learns to love Krishna. Very serious responsibility. Children want affection more than anything. Anamoy. First they want milk. But even with that milk is the mother's affection. The child would rather have the mother's milk than bottled milk. But even bottled milk is good because it's the cow's affection. And it's given but with the mother's affection. So the child is looking for affection, reciprocation. Little Dhruva Maharaj, only 5 years old, his happiness was based on his father's attention, his father's love. When Suruchi, his stepmother, insulted him, it was worse than death. He turned to his father. I'm yours, father, I'm yours. Will you protect me from this terrible insult? My stepmother is telling me that I have no right to sit on your lap, that I'm not really qualified to even be your son. She's challenging your affection for me. What will you do? These were the inevitable thoughts within Dhruva's heart. And King Uttanapada, not wanting to displease his co-wife, ignored Dhruva. Being neglected is painful. It's worse than being chastised. He was ignored. Which really meant to Dhruva that everything his stepmother said was true. So he was weeping, crying, trembling like a leaf. He was angry, he was hurt. Ran to his mother. His mother told him, only Krishna can save you. So he went to the forest. There Narada Muni found him. And he told Narada Muni, I want revenge. I want a kingdom greater than my mother, than my father or my grandfather. I want to show them who I am. Narada Muni told him, just go back home and tolerate these things. You are speaking to a Kshatriya. Your words are true, but they do not sit in my heart. I must find Vishnu because he can fulfill all my desires. So Narada Muni, being a guru, understood the art of transforming a person's heart. Just by associating with Krishna, one becomes attracted to Krishna. And all these material desires gradually go away. So he taught Dhruva the process. Constantly chanting the holy names. He gave him a meditation on the beautiful form of the Lord. He taught him how to worship the deity of the Lord. Dhruva Maharaj performed 4 months of severe austerities just so that he could completely focus his mind on the form of the Lord within his heart and the vibration of the holy name. Through the process, he became purified. Because Krishna is non-different than his form. He's non-different than his name. He's non-different than the sound vibration of his teachings and his pastimes. Because of Dhruva's determination and his enthusiasm, he was transformed. Vishnu understood the transformation that took place in his heart and appeared before him. Dhruva could see the divine form of the Lord within his heart, and then he opened his eyes and he was standing right before him. The Lord asked, "What benediction do you like?" Dhruva wanted to offer prayers, but he was a young boy, he didn't know prayers. But Krishna touched him with his conch shell and empowered him with all the knowledge of the Vedas to pray with eloquent Sanskrit meter and deep, deep, profound meaning. He told the Lord, according to Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, "I wanted a kingdom. I wanted wealth. I wanted prestige. I don't care anything for these things anymore. I have achieved you. I was looking for broken pieces of glass, and I have found the rare, precious diamond of your association. There's nothing more I want." The Lord gave him prema bhakti, the ultimate treasure of love of God, and then told him to return to the kingdom and perform his prescribed duties in the service of the Lord. It is that type of transformation that takes place in every devotee who sincerely follows in the footsteps of Dhruva Maharaj. We must have determination. We must have enthusiasm. We must have patience. We must follow the principles of bhakti. And gradually, we become attracted to Krishna. Simply by remembering Krishna, we become attracted to Krishna. We have a desire to eat, take prasad. We have a desire to see something beautiful. Look at the beauty of the deities. Try to see everything in relationship to how to serve Krishna. Try to hear the beautiful sounds of Krishna's names and glories. If you must touch the garlands of Krishna, the tulsi leaves of Krishna, the devotees of Krishna. Ambarish Maharaj, all of his senses, all of his limbs were engaged in pleasing Krishna. And therefore, everything he did in his life was purifying his heart. The beauty of bhakti is the beauty of Krishna. He's all attractive. Srila Prabhupada explains that Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that we should cultivate remembering Krishna in separation. Remembering Krishna in separation is really an expression of humility. We find this in the songs of the great acharyas. They feel themselves very unqualified, very lowly, and they're longing for Krishna. They're praying for Krishna in a spirit of separation. How do we cultivate that? By hearing the names and pastimes of the Lord, by chanting the names and pastimes of the Lord in the association of devotees. With this attitude of eagerness, enthusiasm. Whatever we do, we should put our heart into it. That is enthusiasm. Whether we're chanting, or sitting in a class, or reading the books, or whatever service we're performing, even if we're doing our job, we should be enthusiastic to do our work in such a way that we can offer the fruits to Krishna. Whether we're dressing the deities, or whether we're cleaning the temple, or whether we're counting money, or whether we're preaching the message, or whether we're cooking food, whatever we do, we should be conscious that I'm doing this for Krishna with enthusiasm, with a longing to know Krishna, with a longing to love Krishna. If you long to love Krishna, Krishna will certainly fulfill that desire. We must cultivate that, both internally and through our acts and words. This is bhakti. And Krishna does reciprocate. He is within our heart. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, they have appeared in this temple simply to attract our hearts back to their loving service. And the devotees who reside within this temple, who are connected to this temple, they are Radharani and Gopinath's associates to enliven each other and to teach the world how to love Radha Gopinath. Rupa Goswami explains that the happiness derived of impersonal liberation is not even a drop in comparison to the happiness found in the vast ocean, the ocean of happiness in loving Krishna. It's so difficult to attain impersonal liberation. And it's so simple to dive into the unlimited ocean of love of Krishna. Just orchestrate, organize your life in such a way that everything you do is harmonized with Krishna's pleasure, with Krishna's devotees. The holy name of Krishna is the most accessible, benevolent, and merciful blessing of Krishna. Krishna appears within his name at all times. Therefore, even when we are worshiping the deity, everything we do must be connected to the chanting of the holy names. In our prayers, in our songs, in our puja, the holy name of Krishna is there to enliven our hearts, to actually learn to see and love the deity, both on the temple, within the heart, and within every living being. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that we should follow in the footsteps of the gopis of Vrindavan. Not that we can artificially imitate gopis, but the principle of their cultivating love in separation is the most It is the most pleasing process to the heart of the Lord. And how do we do that? The gopis were always talking about Krishna. Everything they were doing or saying was simply in relationship to Krishna. They were always looking for Krishna. Parikshit Maharaj was always looking for Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj was always looking for Krishna. In the Bible it is said, seek and ye shall find, knock and the door will open. If we're seeking Krishna in our life, Krishna will reveal himself. He will attract our hearts. Gopinath is standing before us playing upon his flute just to attract our hearts. In the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada explains how Krishna attracts all living entities when he plays upon his flute. The gopis are explaining that they're remembering Krishna. During the daytime, Krishna goes out to herd cows with the gopas. And all day long, Lord Chaitanya expressing the mood of gopis is explaining how when Krishna is absent from them, a moment seems like 12 years or more. Think about that. It's a profound statement. It's actually the reality. Can you remember what you were doing 12 years ago? A lot of things have passed in that time. But for those who love Krishna, a moment's separation is like 12 years or more. And therefore, they're completely absorbed in remembering Krishna. One of them is speaking that when Krishna's in the pasture grounds, he rests his body on his left elbow. Then he places his head in his left palm. He moves his eyebrows in a way that they appear to be dancing. And then with his right hand, he plays upon his flute. The sound of Krishna's flute is so enchanting that the demigods with their wives come on their airplanes just to hear that sound. And the demigods' wives, who are very beautiful and expert in all arts and culture of singing, they become ashamed of their own singing upon hearing the flute. They become so enchanted that their hair loosens and their dresses loosen as well. They sit as if stunned, just listening to the beautiful song of Gopal's flute. The goddess Lakshmi, resting upon his chest, circled by a beautiful golden necklace, Krishna plays his flute just to enliven the hearts of his devotees. He is the only friend of the suffering. When the cows and the animals hear his flute, they take a morsel of grass in their mouths. And while the food is actually in their mouth, the flute enchants them so much that they stop chewing. Their mouths become stunned. The food is just sitting in their mouth. Then their ears, big ears, go up just to catch the nectar of the flute that enters their ears into our hearts. Tears flow from their eyes. In their heart of hearts, they're embracing Krishna. Prabhupada says, heart to heart. And all the animals, the deers, the cows, all the animals of Vrindavan stand stunned. even the non-moving, inanimate beings, like the river and the lakes, they become stunned. Krishna enters into the forest with peacock feather in his hair. His body is smeared with many of the natural minerals of Vrindavan. He has flowers and leaves decorating the various parts of his hair and body. He plays his flute. The river Jamuna stops flowing. She remains completely still, patiently waiting. What is she waiting for? She's waiting for a breeze, hoping and praying that that breeze will carry a dust particle of Krishna's lotus feet to land upon her. The gopis explain that when Krishna wanders through the forests of Vrindavan or in the hill of Govardhan accompanied by the gopas, he plays his flute to call his cows. At that time, the trees and the plants become so enchanted, they want to surrender everything they have to Krishna. They offer their fruits, their flowers, honey from their trunks, everything to Krishna. This is reciprocation of love. As we become attracted to Krishna, we want to give everything to Krishna, unconditionally. The trees, the creepers, the bushes, even the rocks of Vrindavan. Their life, their soul, their everything is simply to give their lives and everything they have to Krishna. That is bhakti. Krishna walks in the bank of the Jamuna. He's decorated with tilak and a beautiful garland of the wild flowers of Vrindavan. His body is smeared with chandan. He hears the buzzing of the bumblebees. The bumblebees become mad for the nectar of the atmosphere created by Krishna. And they're buzzing. They're actually singing in their own language. They're singing the glories of Krishna. They're expressing their love for Krishna. And Krishna, to reciprocate, plays in harmony with the humming of the bees. That creates such an incredible orchestration of sound. Krishna's playing his flute. The bees are accompanying him by buzzing in ecstasy. Each one is increasing. The bees are increasing the ecstasy of Krishna's playing, and Krishna's playing is increasing the ecstasy of the bees singing. When the birds and the aquatics hear this symphony, they become enchanted. The birds forget how to fly. The fish forget how to swim. They all just, wherever they are, just remain completely stunned and motionless in their position, inconceivably hearing the nectar of the all-attractive love of Krishna's flute. The love of Krishna's heart is carried through his breath into the holes of his flute. And the sound vibration, when Krishna plays upon his flute, is the love of his heart emanating through sound vibration to fill the atmosphere of Vrindavan. And that love conquers all living beings. Krishna goes to the top of Govardhan Hill with Balaram and his friends, charming all creation. The clouds are thundering, but when they hear Krishna playing his flute, they do not want to disturb that beautiful sound. The clouds remain still and listen. Being so charmed by the all-attractive love of Krishna, the clouds very lightly, softly rumble just to congratulate and offer their gratitude to Krishna for his mercy. The Krishna book explains how Krishna is very dear friends with the clouds. Why? Because just as the clouds relieve people from the excessive heat of the summer, in a similar way, Krishna, when he showers his mercy upon us, he relieves us of the scorching, burning heat of material existence that we have been suffering since time immemorial. Here in Bombay, the month of April and May and beginning of June, very hot. Those of you who have air conditioners, you artificially try to escape the heat, but you have to go outside sometime or other. Just waiting for the clouds to come to shade that sun and bring us water. Actually, rain is so important. We cannot live without rain. We don't like when rain comes. It's an inconvenience. But we die if it doesn't come. That's the nature of the world. Tapasya. If you want to survive, you have to endure the tapasya of rain. Just like yesterday was big, big rain. I saw people running from it. Becoming all wet. People were screaming. Sometimes there's floods and your car doesn't even drive. So much inconvenience through rains. But you cannot survive without it. All our food, our water, our nourishment is coming through the rains. That is the principle of tapasya. If you want to make spiritual progress, you must perform some austerities. Krishna says what tastes like poison at the beginning tastes like nectar in the end. We perform tapasya. It may not be enjoyable, but it sustains our life and gives us the real fruit of ecstatic love in the future. So yes, the rain is longed for by all natural beings in the heat of the summer. Just last week I was in Italy. It was very hot. It was the hottest it has been in 120 years. Record temperatures. Every day was average 42 degrees Celsius, sometimes up to 45 degrees Celsius. Now in India, you're kind of used to that. But in Italy, they don't know what to do. According to newspaper calculations in France, it wasn't even that hot. They're calculating thousands and thousands of people died just of the heat. And I remember the last day I was there, a rain cloud formed in the sky. Everyone was so happy. There was such a drought in Italy. An unprecedented incident occurred. Would you like to hear? In Vatican Square, every Sunday, the Pope gives an address to thousands and thousands of his faithful followers. Just a couple weeks ago, while I was there in Italy, the Pope, billions of dollars of losses were there because of drought. There was just so much heat. It was just drying up and withering up the fields. Italy is called the Garden of Europe. So much of their economy is based on growing grapes and growing olives and growing vegetables and fruits. There was no rain. Just heat, heat, and heat. The Pope told all of his followers in Italy that they should sincerely and earnestly pray to God for rain.
Hare Krishna.
He was feeling very compassionate toward the plight of all these people. They were suffering terribly. When that cloud came into the sky, I actually heard from a distance away from our temple, people were actually shooting off fireworks to celebrate that a cloud came in the sky with some hope that that cloud might somehow or other give rain. And on that day, the cloud formed bigger, bigger. It became dark blue in color. And then, rain. Everyone was relief. But it only rained for about 5 minutes. And the cloud evaporated, and everyone was little relieved. But Krishna is not that type of rain cloud. Sometimes he is. He gives us a little mercy just to attract our taste. Just like Narada Muni, he was longing for God. The heart without love of God, Rupa Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, they explain the heart that is not experiencing love of God is like a desert. It's dry. It's a miserable condition. We're longing for the rain of Krishna's mercy to fall upon our dry, desert-like hearts. So Narada Muni, in his previous birth, is a maid servant. Just by associating with devotees and hearing about Krishna, he was so attracted, he renounced everything for Krishna. He just wanted Krishna. Vyavashayatma kabudhir ekeha kuru nandana. He's determined. He was going place to place to searching for Krishna, meditating on Krishna, chanting Krishna's names constantly. And then in his meditation, that beautiful monsoon rain cloud of Krishna appeared. And the water of his mercy fell, but then it went away. Then Narada Muni was even more determined and agitated for Krishna. So in the same way, Krishna gives us some little sprinkles of his mercy, some little sprinkles of taste, of experience. He gives us sometimes a little taste of the nectar of the holy name, of the nectar of his pastimes, of the nectar of his beauty, just so that we will long and be willing to sacrifice everything to get that again and to never lose it. Just as the cloud forms a very, very dark blue color, which represents the rain of mercy that it is about to shower, so Krishna, who has a beautiful complexion like monsoon cloud, Shyam Sundar, he will, that beautiful form, when we remember that Shyam Sundar form of Krishna, just the remembrance sincerely shades us from the scorching heat of the sun of material miseries. And when he showers the rains of our mercy upon us, all of our desires are completely fulfilled. Thus, the clouds were rumbling with thunder in perfect harmony with Krishna's flute. And just to congratulate their superior friend, instead of rain, they showered small flowers on top of Krishna's head. Krishna's melodies of his flute, he composes ever new melodies. Such intricate, artistically beautiful melodies that even the Gandharvas, the Kanaras, and the demigods who are expert in all musical ragas, they're fascinated by the compositions that are being played through the sweet medium of Krishna's flute. And the black she-deer, they come a-running, approaching Krishna, who is garlanded with a beautiful garland of tulsi leaves. And those black deers, they forget their homes. They forget their husbands. They forget everything of all material conceptions. The gopis are feeling that we are like those black deers. Krishna's all a chanting beautiful form, and the song of his sweet flute attracts our hearts to exclusively surrender to him. This is what Janmashtami is about. Krishna coming to this world to enchant and attract our hearts with his love and with his mercy. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita because unless we understand these principles of what this world is about, what is its relationship with the soul, who we are, how we're implicated by karmas, unless we understand philosophically these principles, we will not actually be able to have a dignified understanding of who Krishna is. People who simply read Srimad Bhagavatam without the teachings of Gita have sentimental misconceptions of Krishna. Krishna is the absolute truth. We are all his eternal parts and parcels. To surrender to Krishna is not a horrible thing. It's the sweetest thing. Because Krishna is all attractive. So let us open our minds and open our hearts to Krishna's mercy so that we will be attracted to the all-beautiful source of all attraction, Krishna. How do we do that? by opening our hearts to his instructions, by living in harmony with his words. The Vedic literatures were born of the sound of Krishna's flute, which entered into the heart of Lord Brahma. We cannot hear his flute directly. Why? Because we are conditioned. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. You cannot hear Krishna's flute or really appreciate Krishna's form until we are purified of all material ego, until our eyes are anointed with the self of love. So in our position, Krishna is so kind. He manifests his all attractive qualities through his instructions, through the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's flute is attracting us, drawing us, inviting us back home, back to his loving service. And especially, he is calling us back through his holy names. By learning through Guru Sadhu Shastra the proper disposition in which we live, so that we can properly chant the holy names, Krishna will manifest his six opulences, his all-attractive embodiment of love that will be revealed within our hearts. That is our goal of life. Do not try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in such a way that he will be pleased to reveal himself to you. It is with this consciousness that we come together to very loudly chant the holy name. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Everyone, let us, for the pleasure of Sri Radha Gopinath and the encouragement of all the devotees, let us really cry out in that spirit of longing for Krishna to transform our hearts and awaken real attraction.